Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Is Trump out of cash? The former president faces a deadline to arrange a $454 million bond while his legal team is signaling we may not be able to show New York the money. Georgia DA Fani Willis can remain on, but that whole saga has raised major uncertainty on the timing and future of that case. And then down in Ohio, Trump once again proved he is the Republican Party, period. His handpicked candidate for Senate beat out the more moderate candidate endorsed by the Republican establishment. And then a battle is raging in federal courts over a controversial Texas immigration law. We'll tell you what's going on and why it will matter for 2024. Finally, Democrats have become more vocally critical of Israel's Netanyahu. We'll explore the moral and political implications of that trend. Welcome back to the podcast for the 54% of Americans who vote for progress in every election and want to convince their conservative friends and family members to join our majority. This is Majority 54. Again, I'm really excited because we have a special guest today. Jason is in an undisclosed location, so we are welcoming on an Army veteran, the former head of the Lincoln Project, host of On Democracy here at the Midas Network, the self-described and objectively devastatingly handsome Fred Wellman. Welcome to the podcast.
That wasn't supposed to be added, but I appreciate it.
You told me. I took the notes.
That's what I get for being cocky.
Well, welcome to the podcast. I'm a big fan, and we've got some stuff to talk about today. I think let's start with some Trump legal. Where is it? There it is. All right, so we've got this. Let's start with some unfortunate news for the former president. He has a couple of days now to comply with a New York court ruling to arrange a bond of $454 million. And his lawyers are basically saying he's not going to be able to make this bond. Fred, are we going to be able to buy some of these Trump properties at fire sale prices in New York?
I'm pretty excited. I've always wanted a moldy beach club. Now, I did shed almost an entire tear. It's interesting. He sat on his hands for 25 days, right? I don't think he's ever had to face consequences, Ravi, right? So he literally thought he'd get out of this. So he's made no moves to like sell or liquidate, get any liquid assets. He's been claiming he has them, but now we're getting filings saying, nobody has those. He goes, no, you literally said you had them. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I saw a story today. I thought maybe you saw that there literally is talk about selling Trump Tower, which would be
wonderful.
Amazing.
Yeah. I personally would love to see his name off of every possible property in New York. And this,
value goes
this
up.
Is a potential route to that. Yeah. I mean, these are some really, despite, his motif is not mine, but you could imagine you could probably do some sprucing up at a certain point, but these are some really like great properties. So somebody's going to swoop in here and grab these things. It'll be really fascinating to see. We'll know in a few days what happens here. News organizations have estimated that Trump has about $300 million in liquid assets. He's already put aside $100 million for the E. Jean Carroll case. So he's running out of money. Now, of course, he's not going to be bankrupt unless there's truly something weird going on behind the scenes. But he, as we're talking about, the first thing we'll see here is him selling things off if he can't get somebody else, or going hat in hand to the Saudis, Russians, who knows who else. I think people should keep an eye on if he does wind up posting bonds, who these people are who are guaranteeing him. And there have been already some questions of the insurance company that he used for the E. Jean Carroll case. So this is just another opportunity for corruption for him.
Well, there was a story about that, how Chubb, the CEO of Chubb sent out a note to investors and investor saying that, hey, you know, we didn't take a position here. It's just a reasonable bond. But they, when they came to the second one, you know, it appears Trump was really sure that Chubb would insure him again. And they said, nah, we can't take bills. We can't take property, which is really ironic because he's been inflating his property for so long. They don't trust him now. Right. But I mean, you're right. They're worth money. Trump Tower isn't a great location. I'm not into the whole Saddam decoration. I served in Iraq. I actually lived in two of Saddam's palaces in my three tours. So I'm not into the gold, but you know, it's okay. It takes me back. But
you know, it's funny. I've been to one of those. I went to Iraq when I was at the State Department. I was at wherever Odierno was in Baghdad. I went to one of those like weird looking
spots. I was there in 2005. Yeah. I started there. Yeah. I worked at both. I had the one in the green zone and the one at the airport. So I've lived in some Saddam palaces and it's not my style. You're right. But they are great locations and they will sell for money. I think you have to look at, for me, I'm the political hack here as opposed to the lawyer. As a political hack, I know he's freaking out. Because he has made his entire political persona that he's a billionaire, that he's rich. Alina Haba was up until last week saying, oh, of course he's a billionaire. He's got plenty of cash. Even if he has to go hat in hand to the Saudis or anybody, he's admitting he does not have the billions of dollars to make ends meet. So it really, I saw an article today saying that he really is freaking out at this point, that he knows that come Monday, he's going to have to admit he's not, you know, a bazillionaire like he says he is. And I think that's interesting. I don't know if that'll change the cult much, but it is a big chip in his whole facade of being this made millionaire. And it's not true. Yeah. It's not true at all.
Well, the stakes couldn't be higher for this guy coming into this election. He's got all these cases that the assumption and the sort of in the political debates and in the media, which is I understand we've been operating under this assumption is anything that happens after November really doesn't matter because like you have to kind of hold this guy accountable before the election because once he gets into the White House, he's going to be able to use the machinery of the White House and the power that he has to duck any accountability. That's true. But yeah. I don't think people are spending enough time thinking about, well, what if this guy loses? Like he will run out of money and he'll be potentially have multiple opportunities to go to prison and he won't have the cover of the White House to drop the charges or the immunity of the executive office. Unless the Supreme Court steps in and says he's got that. I mean, it's quite something to think about, which is why he's pretty urgent about winning this election. Seems like he has no other out except winning the presidency.
I mean, we're really at the deadline. And as we get close to the election, and especially as polls, as we know, if you saw polls this week, average polling now has Biden ahead in a slight couple of decimal points. But for the first time, I think in the whole time, Biden is coming out on top of the polling. So he's going to get crazier and crazier, I think. I think we're going to see, you know, I mean, as more suits start, we're going to have Fannie Willis start. We're going to have Alvin Bragg start at some point, right? Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, he's going to be freaking out. And as we get closer, I mean, God, he is. I mean, I worry. I was literally just having a conversation with a journalist about political violence. I do worry about his rhetoric.
For sure.
I mean, he's guaranteeing now, right, Robbie?
He's,
I mean, it's
he's been, already saying it, though. He's already saying
now.
And you know, speaking of the Bragg and Willis cases, on the Bragg front, that case looks like it's going to be delayed at least a month. There was a document dump from the U.S. Attorney's Office. It's just a Keystone Cops kind of situation here when it comes to these cases. So you got Bragg, who, you know, and this particular one wasn't his fault. I blame the U.S. Attorney's Office in part and Trump's lawyers for some clever delay tactics, which seems to be their specialty. But that one looks like it's going to be delayed at least a month, which in and of itself is not an issue because we're going to see that trial before the election in all likelihood. Yeah. But it's on the appeal is going to be the issue. We've talked about this previously. You're talking about with Tristan Snell. We were talking to him about this, and he thinks that the appeal will play out probably after the election. Now, Willis' case is the one that's really turbulent, I guess is the right word to say. So the judge overseeing that case has allowed Willis to stay on under the condition that the Nathan Wade, who is the lead prosecutor who she allegedly had a romantic relationship with, had to exit the case. And this just out this morning, the judge McAfee has allowed an appeal to go forward against his ruling. But he's going to continue on with the case. So it's not going to delay the case, at least for now. But I haven't, you know, that just came out. I haven't done my homework on what the sort of appellate judges in Georgia look like, but I can't imagine that they're Democrats, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I can't imagine they are, but by the same token, to what end? I mean, this one's kind of, now again, I'm not the lawyer on this show, but I am, to what end? I mean, again, it is delay tactics, but you know, prosecution's the prosecution, it's going to get prosecuted, no matter if she's sitting in the courtroom or not. They really are just sort of throwing whatever they can against the wall to push it out. But I think there's danger. I mean, at a certain point, we're in a danger zone for them too. You know, I'm a political hack again. If he thinks he can survive this, and he has survived everything, right, Rob? I mean, there's nothing has knocked him down. Then maybe he should just get the damn court case over with, win, lose, appeal long before the election. Part of the things that I don't think they're doing a good job in their calculation is the longer they drag out, we may be in the middle of actual prosecutions during the RNC convention, right? And, or during the act, people are going to start early voting with his happy ass sitting in a court. You know what I mean? And I tell you, that's quite a visual to be sending out as you're voting for a guy in early voting, that he's spending his days instead of on the campaign trail, he's sitting across from a prosecutor. So I do wonder about the political tactic, the legal tactics and the political tactics come together in almost a perfect storm. You know, so for me as a political hack, I keep saying, man, your delay may actually blow up in your face, because they're not going to be able to delay it without some miracle past the election, right? Either case, because they're state cases. I just may end up with number one candidate, the Republican candidate, sitting at the courtroom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. That's the sort of Trump legal update. Getting to the political side of 2024, there was some, you know, I would say interesting news coming out of Ohio this week. So this guy, Bernie Moreno, who's a wealthy former car dealer and political newcomer, emerged as the victor in the three-way race for the Ohio Republican primary. And this was fascinating because you had Mike DeWine, very, very popular Republican governor in Ohio and former senator, and former Senator Rob Portman, who are both like what we would call in this day and age moderates in Ohio.
Whatever that is.
Yeah. But two very well respected, at least within the state of Ohio, amongst the sort of independent voters and Republican electorate, you'd think, both backed a different candidate, Matt Dolan, who's another wealthy politician there. And Trump won this race, basically just showing once again that the Republican Party is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the Republican Party.
Yeah, yeah. And again, yet another weak candidate. Of course, right before the primary last week came out, it came out that this gentleman apparently had an adult friend finder profile that was set up in his email address at his parents' home in Fort Lauderdale for gay hookups, which was quite scandalous the weekend before the election, which reminds me a lot of what just happened with the guy in North Carolina, you know, Robinson. You know, we find out this really stuff about him. Just, I mean, again, you've got a MAGA candidate they've put in place who very well it could just end up cost them the election. They keep doing this to themselves, but you're right. It is Trump's party to pick these people, but Trump also has a history of picking the absolute just most terrible people.
Yeah. And, you know, in case anybody's wondering in the audience, what you're saying is it's no scandal to be gay. It's a scandal to be a hypocrite. That's the scandal.
Bingo. Bingo. And the story, it's as a political guy, I love the story. Like, they actually had, just, I don't know if you followed it, but they're saying it was an intern who played a prank on him at his car dealership, who had access to his email and set up this thing as like a joke. And that intern just so happens to be a major donor to the campaign now. Okay. And you're like, okay. And then they actually came out with a guy who was the founder of Adult Friend Finder. You can't make this up, who also has to be a donor. And he came out with a letter saying, oh yeah, that's totally plausible. It's been really fascinating. It's a fascinating case study in the spin machine trying to get out of it. But in the end, you've got a guy who's very MAGA, who's inexperienced. He's never been a political candidate before. And now he's the nominee in a critical state. I mean, they've got to get Ohio. And look, Sherrod Brown's no joke, man. He's a good politician. He's been in office a long time. He's super hardworking.
He's got a clear message.
Down to earth, just a regular dude.
In a sane world, he will win this race. It's a tough, it's an uphill battle in Ohio, but let's go. He immediately is on TV. Talking about this head-to-head race. Let's go to this clip.
So that they know what's at stake in this election between these two candidates for Senate. Well, they know that Bernie Marino always looks out for himself. I mean, he has said in this campaign that he won't work with Democrats. He just is going to go to Washington and do his own thing. He's illustrated that by again calling for a national abortion ban with no exceptions, even though Ohio overwhelmingly last November voted by 13 points for constitutional amendment on abortion rights. And the arrogance of he doesn't really care what the voters want. That's really who he is. And we will make that contrast of I fight for Ohio. I listen to people. I do roundtables all over the state. That's how we helped Senator Tester write the PACT Act. That's how we got a good infrastructure bill. That's how we got the CHIPS bill. It's going to create thousands of jobs in Ohio. That's how you do this job. You go county to county. You listen to people. You come back with ideas. You convince your colleagues to pass the child tax credit. You convince your colleagues on a whole host of issues, like on the pension bill, where we saved the pension of 100,000 Ohio workers, Ohio union workers. So that's how you do this job. You don't approach it arrogantly. And I know best. I don't care that women have said that they want control with their doctors of their own health care. I know better. And I'm going to override that, overturn that.
Well, this map, you know, the context here is that the map is brutal for Democrats in 2024. So there are 34 seats up for grabs, including 20 held by Democrats, 11 held by Republicans, 3 by independents. One of those independents, of course, is Kyrsten Sinema, who won't be running again. And look, like, Democrats have to win in states like Ohio. They have to keep Tester's seat. And then potentially we're probably going to need at least one upset like Texas or something. And so we really need to we need to do everything we possibly can here. And, you know, the context is that we're looking much better in the House. And so, you know, if we could somehow pull off some miracle in the Senate, and win back the House, we'll be sitting pretty. And I do think it's possible. I mean, it's hard, but it's possible.
I agree. I think the Senate map is hard. We've got great candidates. I mean, the nice thing you're seeing, what I'm watching, and I got a new series I'm doing on the network here. Got a plug, shameless plug, called In the Hot Seat, where I've been interviewing these candidates for Democratic office. I interviewed Colin Allred against Ted Cruz. I interviewed Debbie McCarthy Powell, was running against Rick Scott of Florida. Obviously, these are tough battles, but really good quality candidates are coming out of the Democratic field this year that we can feel good about getting behind that are going to do well. Obviously, Sherrod Brown's terrific. John Tesh is just a great, genuine guy who's got a good chance. So if we add then the layer of Roe v. Wade, Dobbs, abortion, hopefully we'll get a boost out of that, a presidential year. Look, I was skeptical too, but I think we've got a winning shot and the numbers are off. I mean, even here in Missouri, I live in Missouri. You know, Lucas Coates, the numbers are good for Lucas. You know, I'm done. You know, the polls, if you believe polls, which of course, obviously, you know, it ain't out of the ear. It is out of possible up against Josh Hawley, who nobody likes. Nobody likes Josh Hawley. So right. I think if you add in that layer of abortion being on the ballot, Democrats keep winning. We keep winning races over and over these last 3 years. I don't know. There is cause for optimism. I always have this weird, you probably don't see where I have this weird streak of optimism that I can't.
I love it. That's good.
I tried, you know.
Audience will love that. You know, they say that tragedy requires hubris. And I think for the Republicans, there's a lot of hubris on their side. They think that they can continue to get away with it, especially places like Missouri, where they just, they don't even believe that they have to worry about general elections there. And at some point, they may get shocked. The key is just to keep fielding great candidates and keep hoping and working really hard on the ground. Well, with that, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this Texas border battle. And then we're going to talk about some of the Israel politics in the Senate, all this and more when we come back. Candidly, finding the right life insurance to protect my family has never been more important. And you should make life insurance a part of your financial planning this year. And you should start shopping now with Policy Genius to find the right policy to protect your family. Getting life insurance today means you'll have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to you, your family can cover expenses while getting back on their feet. Luckily, Policy Genius helps you compare your options from top companies and their team of licensed experts. And they're on hand to help you talk through it. I have life insurance and it's given me a tremendous peace of mind. And Policy Genius technology makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from America's top insurers in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. So even if you already have life insurance policies through work, it may not offer enough protection for your family needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can go find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius has licensed, award-winning agents who can help you find the best fit for your needs. They work for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over the other so that you can trust their guidance. No wonder they have thousands of five-star reviews on Google and Trustpilot. Save time and money. Provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com/majority or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com/majority. This episode is sponsored by Roan. If you're like me, you understand the pains of finding what to wear. Most clothes are uncomfortable. They may be too tight. They never, you know, actually fit your size because, you know, a lot of us are not exactly small, medium, large, extra large. We're complicated. Sometimes when you find something you like, you can only wear it for a few hours before that important meeting or dinner, and then you have to change into something else. And everyone wants to dress their best. You want to look good at all times. And frankly, it's a confidence booster. So here's the deal. Men's closets were due for a radical reinvention, and Roan stepped up to the challenge. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and flexible set of products known to man, and here's why. Roan helps you get ready for any occasion with the commuter collection, which offers the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, and polos. You never have to worry about what to wear when you have the Roan commuter collection. And here's some anecdote. I'm wearing my Roan pants right now. And last week I was at a wedding. I wore my Roan button-down shirt to the wedding at a formal wedding, and I will also wear it tomorrow when I just, you know, go into a coffee shop to have a meeting. It's that versatile. So it's time to feel confident without the hassle. With Roan's wrinkle release technology, wrinkles disappear as you stretch and wear the products. It's that easy. Yeah, I actually, you know, not so neatly folded that shirt in my bag for the wedding, and I was able to take it out, and automatically I was able to put it on. It looked like I had ironed it, but I didn't. You know, it's an inside secret between us. So with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology, you'll also be smelling fresh and clean all day. On top of that, Roan is 100% machine washable, so you can dish the dry cleaner altogether. We're on the move a lot, and the Roan commuter collection has never let me down. The versatility and overall comfort of the collection is undefeated. I absolutely love it. And even after I wear it all day, I feel super fresh because that Gold Fusion anti-odor technology. At that wedding, I was dancing up a storm, wore it, no problems. So the commuter collection can get you through any work day and straight into whatever comes next. So head to roan.com/majority and use the promo code majority to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to rhone.com/majority and use the code majority. It's time to find your corner office comfort. All right. Well, there's a lot of action going on at the border. So the Supreme Court temporarily paved the way for a controversial Texas law that basically allows them to enforce the nation's immigration laws, or, you know, or defy them, depending on how you look at the law. In Texas, basically lock up people who cross over the border. The Supreme Court basically paved the way for that implementation of that law. An appeals court temporarily seems to have frozen implementation of that law.
Yeah.
My reading of this, it looks like this is going to go through, and it's going to be an interesting new phase in the immigration debates in this country, where essentially states now will be empowered to do something that was previously the purview of the federal government, which is immigration enforcement.
I find it a slippery slope, you know, and I talk this a lot that, especially as a veteran, you know, veteran of Iraq, one of the things I did in Iraq, you know, Jace was in Afghanistan doing a similar thing, is I interact a lot with the population. I, especially in the early days, that first tour I did in 2003, 2004, where I did civil affairs. And, you know, I talked to a lot of these civilians and how they experienced under Saddam Hussein, you know, the life under an authoritarian where the black SUVs would pull up your neighbor's house and scoop everybody up and take them off. It's just, for me, I live in, I remember saying my Iraqi friend saying, you know, thank God I live in America. And now we've got a state that's passed a law that says, well, you look kind of Latino, you show us your papers. It's literally a show us your papers law. And And you can ruin people's lives just by picking them up off the street and throwing them in jail till they show you your papers. I mean, if you've ever been arrested, it's not a great experience. Okay. And so I'm horrified. I'm just going to, and I think it's a very short, very, very short trip to much more dangerous and scary things where, you know, we're being divided against each other. I'm so disappointed with the Supreme Court. I'm happy that the appeals court stopped it once again, but these laws, this is such a slippery slope. It makes me very, very, very nervous. It really does.
Well, the Supreme Court's three liberal justices dissented, and they said this law invites further chaos and crisis in the immigration enforcement. They said, quote, this law will disrupt sensitive foreign relations, frustrate the protection of individuals fleeing persecution, hamper active federal enforcement efforts, undermine federal agencies' abilities to detect and monitor imminent security threats, and deter non-citizens reporting abuse or trafficking. I do think this is going to be... This is one step, I think, in a long line of a trend that we're going to only see more of, which is a sort of clash between the federal government and local authorities. Jason and I have been long speculating that there's like an interstate extradition issue that's looming in some of this Trump stuff, whether or not he wins the presidency. At some point, there's going to be judgments against him, in some certain cases, civil judgments against him, in certain cases, criminal probably judgments against him. Some of those will be state, some of those might be federal. And I could see him being in places like Florida and basically fighting the equivalent of interstate extradition. And, you know, if I were him and I'm in a difficult slot, I'm going to a place like Alabama or something, and I'm like enjoying the protection of a state that is going to fight the federal government or other states every step of the way. And I think there's like a non-zero chance that that could be like an unprecedented federalist standoff that we have in this country.
Even if he loses, I agree. And, you know, there's hints of that already. I believe there was a case just recently where a person was accused of murder in New York. The local prosecutor refused to extradite them from Arizona to New York. And he stated specifically because Alvin Bragg is a political prosecutor. So, I mean, if they're... I'm still in shock about it. It's like, holy, an actual guy accused of murder and they're injecting the politics into it. So you're right. It is, there's a non-zero chance. I mean, I would even say there's even a damn near majority chance that is definitely in the realm of possible. And like you said, that we get some really weird places pretty quick. We have states asserting their rights against the federal government or other states. I mean, as a historian, a student of history, if you will, all I can say is yikes, right? I mean, Jesus, man.
Unbelievable. Well, okay, going international now. Right. Chuck Schumer turned some heads. So he basically called out Netanyahu. He says he's lost his way. He's too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza. And he really went in on Netanyahu. He's traditionally been an ally to Israel and Netanyahu. Let's go to a clip from Schumer on the Senate floor.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has all too frequently bowed to the demands of extremists like Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gavir and the settlers in the West Bank. I have known Prime Minister Netanyahu for a very long time. While we have vehemently disagreed on many occasions, I will always respect his extraordinary bravery for Israel on the battlefield as a younger man. I believe in his heart, he has his highest priority is the security of Israel. However, I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel.
So he called for early elections. Biden called that Schumer speech a good speech. It seems like there's alignment now. Amongst some of the more pro-Israel Democrats out there, essentially, you know, this has been a line that Jason and I have had on this podcast for a long time, which is you could believe in the existence of Israel. You could be quote unquote pro-Israel, whatever that means, while still thinking that Netanyahu is a right-wing, authoritarian-esque leader who is not good for the world or for the people of Israel. And although there's like daylight, I think, between certain members of the left coalition on, you know, whether, you know, people are harder or easier on the Israelis or the Palestinians and how people feel about Hamas or about the existence of Israel borders. I do think there's broad alignment now that Netanyahu is bad for that country and that he has lost his way, in the words of Schumer. And I do think that this is a positive development to see leaders of the Democratic Party coming out and saying what I think is obvious to anybody who's looking at that conflict.
Yeah, and I think they've been fishing for a message in a lot of ways, don't you think? I mean, I feel like the Democratic leadership has struggled a bit. We do want to support our allies. We do want to support their right to defend themselves from October 7th. We do want them to support themselves and defend themselves from terrorism. But there is a fine line when you see so much death and so much destruction. Again, and Jason and I share the same view on that. I mean, we have to abide by the laws of war. We have to go over extreme to ensure the civilians caught in the crossfire are fed and have safety. And unfortunately, with this method of war, which was the word we had when they went to Gaza, it's not happening like it should. I mean, and we could argue all day about whether or not they're following the laws of war, et cetera. That's been a case. But I do think you're right to say at least, hey, and look, Netanyahu's made it clear. I mean, he's made it clear. He constantly says, oh, no, you know, no elections, this war is over. Okay, when's the war going to be over? Well, they have not defined the aims of this war.
Like that.
Well, that's it. That's it.
And part of the issue, and I think and Schumer's getting to this, is like the personal interests of Netanyahu are getting in the way of the larger interests of his country. And it reminds me of what we have back home, right? It's like the personal interests of Donald Trump trump the interests of either his party or the country. And you know, my heart goes out to the people in Israel and Gaza who have to deal with this guy who's, you know, like, I think standing in the way, and he's been standing in the way. We've talked about this on this pod. He's been standing in the way of peace since I was in probably elementary school. So this guy, it would be great to see him go, and it would also be great to see him replaced by somebody who's actually legitimately committed to peace. Because it, you know, we need people to take bold action. You know, people like Rabin, people like Ehud Barak, who were willing to put their, you know, in the case of Rabin, he put his life on the line, lost his life because he was willing to push for peace. And I'm hoping we can see a new generation of Israeli and Palestinian leaders who are willing to do that.
Nobody wins in war. And look, a lot of people haven't experienced, especially it all looks very noble and it looks like the right answer. And when they say these huge statements like, we must destroy them utterly and kill Hamas. And we learned this, you know, and I keep harping on it. I apologize for going back to it, but I worked for a guy named Petraeus when I was in the army. I was actually General Petraeus' spokesman. And the one thing that he said often that I took with me is an experience we had in northern Iraq in 2003 that carried through the rest of the war there in Iraq, was that every time I killed, he used to say, in an industrial grade insurgency, every time I kill one, I create three more. And what that means is, in when you're fighting someone like Hamas, when you're fighting someone like Al Qaeda in Iraq, when you're fighting someone like the Islamic State, as you are killing them, and what the means you do, especially as a large army like we do, where you blow up a whole building. Look, if I kill somebody's grandma, you know, he's going to want to kill people back, right? And so it's a never-ending cycle of slaughter. That you're right. At some point, someone needs to stand up. And look, Hamas is dirty in this. I mean, that's the enemy. For the enemy This is on Hamas. This is Hamas allowing their. Again, Hamas has a very, very dark goal here. They have made the decision that killing of their civilians is okay. And so no one's hands are clean here. And it's not. This is no way apologia for Hamas, but the decision to let these people die, and that's what always my heart goes, especially having had the opportunity to work with the civilians who suffer from war. That's what I did. I was literally on Facebook yesterday with one of the young men that was a civilian in my village that I served in Iraq that first tour. He sent me one of my own pictures from Facebook of I'm writing a Substack about it right now. He circled this young man in this picture under my arm, and he said, this young man died fighting the Islamic State in the Iraqi army. So I'm still in touch with the civilians I served with. So knowing that, having an experience of seeing what war does and the long tail of war, keep in mind that conversation, that young man I met, I had my arm around that picture, that was 21 years ago. Mm. 21 years. And so those
it's crazy served, how long it's been it since that war.
I know, like, right? You know, so the long tail of war, it's generational. You know, I'll never forget the fact that my own son-in-law served in the first invasion and my son-in-law served in the exit. And it just, Israel and Hamas and everyone in that, at some point, everyone's going to have to say, you know, our people are dying. At what point do we figure out not to start killing each other all the time?
Yeah. Well, on that rosy note,
such an upbeat show.
For Grabinor this week, I want to point people in the direction of this organization called Arena, which actually is how Jason and I met back in the weeks after the 2016 election. This Arena puts on summits. So these are opportunities for people to come together and galvanize towards action. We've had basically every conceivable person from rank and file, Democratic operatives to, you know, senior leaders and, you know, everybody from Kamala Harris to Jason and all these types of people, Pete, show up to these things. And we're doing an Arena summit April 18th to 21st in Atlanta, Georgia. And this is going to be an opportunity to convene Democratic change makers and independents as well, and never Trumpers, anybody, to come together to brainstorm and collaborate about the everyday urgency of this movement work. You can go to arena.run or arena.run/events and just check out, you can find the summit information. We also do academies, which are more extended trainings, which are upended to these. You can come, you can see us. Jason might come by. We may do a live recording of Majority 54. We're talking about it. So come by arena.run and, you know, get ready. Like, let's cut through the apathy in this election. Let's commit to action. And so with that, Fred, thank you so much for joining us today. Really wonderful. Appreciate everybody out. Oh, is there anything you want to plug?
I was going to bust in and plug. So obviously my show On Democracy with FP Wellman every Friday night, right here in the Mias Touch Network at 11 PM Eastern, 8 PM Pacific. We talk to the newsmakers, talk about from media to authors. This week, I got a great guest. We're going to talk about Moms for Liberty and how she has been dealing with them for many years. The infiltration of the far right at the lowest levels of our government. I'm really excited about the new series I'm doing called In the Hot Seat with FP Wellman, where I'm talking with Democratic candidates for office. I've talked to Colin Allred. I've talked to Debbie McCarthy Powell. I've talked to the ones you haven't heard of, like this one young wonderful young woman, Kaylee Peterson, running for Idaho 1 for Congress for a second time. Who her very first event she had armed white supremacist militia showed up surround her event. Fascinating. So people, you know, the next one coming out, we just put up Gloria Johnson, who's amazing. Running against Gloria. Marsha Blackburn. Yeah, Gloria's fantastic. Yeah. And then Lucas Kuntz is in the can. You'll see Lucas Kuntz this week talking to him in his run against Josh Hawley. So those are on the Mias Touch Network. They're called In the Hot Seat. Just put Mias Touch FP Wellman and you will find me. And man, I just enjoyed joining you, and I'm always available if you need me.
All right. Well, thank you, my friend. For everybody out there, go out there and leave a review for us. 5 stars, preferably. Just say what you love about the show and omit anything you hate about it. It just helps us out. You know, it helps us kind of rise up the charts and build awareness for this pod. But thank you very much, everybody. We will be back next week. Thank you to the Midas Mighty. Remember, we all have a platform. Make sure to use yours today.